Welcome aboard, space travelers. Please lower your harness and keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle at all times. Prepare for blast off.
Hello and welcome to another episode of That Disneyland Paris podcast. I am Nick.
And I am Paul.
And I've got a weird cadence in my voice because it's been a while. Now, I will say up front, we had planned to get this episode out in June.
Yep, we were all prepped to record last week.
We were prepped. Yeah. But then we got thrown a bit of a curveball. And that delayed the recording until this week. So this is kind of the June episode.
Yeah.
We'll try and get July's out. Well, I was thinking this earlier, actually, because I don't know if you saw, but this weekend coming up is when they're starting to do press previews of the new Pixar show.
Yes.
In the studios.
Yeah.
And it officially opens publicly on the 15th of July.
Yeah,
Which is Saturday week, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we can't really talk about that because it's not happened yet. So, that can be our July episode.
Yeah.
Once that's all kind of been and done. So, you know, hold on for that. So this is just a kind of late June episode. But, Craig, he's not here. I don't want to say like that. But Craig had. A colleague of his at work who is going to Disneyland Paris.
Yeah.
Shortly. I'm trying to think now. Have they actually booked?
Yes, it seems like it, because one of the comments that they're staying in the Cars Hotel and flying from Liverpool.
Yeah. So these were some questions that came in, although I don't know how much of this is going to help. But weirdly... No. Weirdly, today I got a message from a friend of mine, and I'll just read it out. I'll read out the initial comment and then the reply. And the initial comment says, "Nick, we need you. Disneyland Paris, spring 2024. Eurostar. All tips, advice, and PowerPoint presentations welcome." My wife replied to that with, "You're basically sending my husband porn." Because she does, it's one of my favourite subjects. So, I don't know if you're going to listen to this, Paulette, but if you do, this might help, this might not, I don't know. But definitely some of the questions that we've got from, I think it's Sarah, isn't it?
Posh? Hang on.
Sarah from the Wirral.
Which
Craig then put in parentheses, posh Liverpool.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest, I mean, I was only there last year. I don't think there's much of posh Liverpool. I think it's a very, very small block. It's definitely not where Craig lives. It's not posh if there's a curry at the end of your road, is there?
No, you know, definitely not. If you're posh, there's nothing at the end of your road.
Exactly. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe Sarah lives in a castle with a moat. I don't know. But he did specify posh Liverpool. They are booked, but she had some questions. And I think... I don't know if this is buyer's remorse why she's asked some of these questions or whether this might help a future trip. I don't know. But I think as well, these kind of questions do help listeners. And we do this kind of thing, you know, I don't know, like every year, every 18 months or so, do something similar to this. And the thing is, this could, you know, every episode could be your first episode.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope this
and
is
things have changed.
Episode, but, and things have changed. That's also very true.
Which will come up in the first question.
Yes. So I guess without further ado, let's look at that first question. And the first question just says, Eurostar or fly?
Yeah.
I would say, and obviously this is where it kind of gets interesting in where we're both located as well.
Yeah.
Because I think that really has an impact on what you'd like to do, or yeah, what might definitely be the better option for you.
And has an impact on Sarah as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the first question was Eurostar or fly. So, I mean, P-dubs, I don't... Have you flown?
I have flown once.
Was that the last time?
No, the first time I went out for the race weekend, I flew from an airport that no longer exists.
Oh, really? Oh, was that Doncaster?
Robin Hood, yeah. Robin Hood in Doncaster. Was an incredibly early morning. I got dropped off at the airport at 4:30 in the morning.
That is
and
early.
Yeah, it was very early. Lisa dropped me off. And yeah, I honestly wouldn't do that again. That's too much. But in this situation, and I think I brought it up on the last show, I can actually fly to Paris now from East Midlands. It's not Charles de Gaulle. It's the other one.
Torchy. No, it's not Torchy, is it? It's Ceres?
No. Yeah.
Ceres?
No, Ceres is Disneyland. That's where Disneyland is, isn't it?
I'm going to have a look. French airports.
Yeah. I can't remember the blooming name of it now.
I really thought we was going to nail this episode. Orly.
Yes.
Orly.
That's it.
Which is also considered to be Paris.
Yeah.
But like, it's like London Heathrow and London Stansted and London Gatwick. They're not.
Yeah, they're not.
I mean, there's also London Southend, which I'll come on to later.
Yeah. Yeah, which for me probably is easier now is to fly than Eurostar. Only option to get from the other airport is to get the Magic Shuttle, really, which isn't a problem. I've done that before as well.
So that goes from Orly as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not a massive problem. So for me, in the East Midlands, flying is probably the best option now than it was because of the lack of direct trains. Yeah. That was what we were alluding to that has changed.
Mm.
You can no longer directly get to Disneyland Paris. That has now taken hold.
Well, also, as well, it's not just even the direct trains.
No.
Because at the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, obviously all the stations shut, but Ashford and Ebbsfleet were closed as stations. And for anyone that's done Eurostar before, it would leave London Euston. I have to think about it. Is it
King's Cross?
Why did I say Euston?
Oh, it's the never same, been isn't
Euston. It? No, yeah. But it's technically the same building, isn't it?
Yeah.
With a road in between it. So it'd leave from London, and then it would stop at Ebbsfleet and Ashford before carrying on. Normally, stop again at Lille.
Yeah.
And Paris, before going straight on to Disneyland Paris as its final destination, or Val d'Europe. Val d'Europe. It is Disneyland
Paris. Marne Valley.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's because I stay there too often. So it's because that's why I want to get off.
Yeah.
The fact that those stations closed, because we would normally, like, the easiest way for us to go would be Eurostar, and would actually be going from Ebbsfleet. Because Ebbsfleet was about a 30-minute car journey away. The parking at Ebbsfleet was reasonable. I think, I want to say it used to be like about £30 for about 5 days.
Yeah.
Obviously cheap if you wanted less, but that's a good time. That was much more convenient. You know, the last time we went, we had to go from London. I can't remember why we couldn't go from Ebbsfleet that time. But we had to get a direct train from London, and yeah, just getting there and going for the station, it's a pain. It's a palaver.
Yeah.
It's expensive. I mean, if you want to, you know, you can drive down to London, obviously, but parking is so expensive. I don't think people realise how expensive parking is in London. So really, you only want to be going from London if you've come down on some form of public transport, whether that's coach, whether that's by train, whatever. But I mean, that certainly used to be the best for us. and that's because we had stations nearby. But now two of those stations have closed. And originally, they said that they would be closed and it would be reviewed. Then I think maybe late 2020 or early 21, they said they're not reopening for the foreseeable future. It's not financially viable. But I did see this week that Eurostar have said that they may look to change that again. And so they may reopen those stations. But no, that's you know, no decision has been made on that yet, but it looks like it's back on the table, which would change certain things. But as you said about Eurostar, the fact now is that there is a distinct lack of direct trains.
Yep. Which for families is a big loss.
Mm.
Not so much for people like us if we're going on one of our normal trips, because it's just us. We don't mind changing around because it's just us and probably a backpack.
Mm.
But if you're taking a family, I know how difficult it is. I did it. I did the swap over at Lille with a pushchair. They don't give you very long to get on and off. And you know, in Paris, it's not just a case of getting off the train. It's finding another station, changing again. It's not easy.
Well, the last time we went from Lille, actually, you know what? I just realised I made a big boo-boo. The last time we went, we did go from Ebbsfleet, so it was still open. So I don't know why I was talking about it. It must have been a time before. Anyway, the last time we went, this is why I remembered it now, we got off at Lille to change, but because of maintenance works in the station, you didn't change on the platform.
Yeah.
Like you would normally do. And as you say, when you get off the Eurostar, you could be waiting anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour. Right? It all depends on when you've arrived there and when the other trains are scheduled.
Yeah.
But when that train pulls in, it is full panic mode. Because people get off and then you've got to get on. And I think, I want to say that it's normally about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very strict with their timetable. And it's just carnage.
Yeah.
Absolute carnage. To get on there, and we've done it. So, you know, I know this. Like, the first time we went with both of, you know, when they were still babies, trying to get on with a buggy and your suitcases, it's horrendous. Yep. Absolutely horrendous. And then you've got tickets on that train, but someone's always sitting in your seat.
Yeah.
As well. And that's if you can even get to your seats, because people just stand up in gangways. And there's not enough hold places for luggage. So like on a Eurostar, you've got too much. But I mean, it's very rare that people can't get all their luggage in their train compartment.
Yeah.
Is it? Like the luggage spaces are quite adequate.
Yeah, very but much so.
On those TGVs, it's almost non-existent. It's almost like, because those trains are just kind of everyday trains, they're not designed for people with suitcases.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are spaces, but they're limited.
And the big issue you've got is one of the next stops on those trains is the airport.
Mm.
So there's people already on that train that are going to the airport.
Yep. Yep, very true. But the last time we did that, we got off at Lille, and then we had to leave that station, walk down the road, and into another part of Lille station.
Yeah. Lille Flandres.
That's the one. And that, because of that, that actually made it really stress-free, because that train was, you know, that's where it started from. Yeah. And, you know, it had a dedicated time to when it was departing. So it meant that, you know, you could rock up there 10 minutes, 15 minutes before, 5 minutes before if you really wanted to, and not feel like you're rushing to get on.
Yeah.
You know, and be able to put your suitcase where you need it to, go and find your seats, go and seat your seat out if someone's already sitting in it. Now you get time to do this without any of the stress that you normally get. So if they were doing that, I wouldn't mind so much, but it doesn't appear that they're doing that either anymore. So for me, Eurostar with a family, now they've changed it completely, is a massive, massive pain.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Paris Gare du Nord.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is, like, you know, when I, if I go on my own, this is what I would normally do. I'd get a train to Paris because they're normally, they're more frequent. They're much cheaper than, you know, trying to get a train to Disneyland Paris as well. Certainly were. And the journey from there is about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But when you get off the train, you have to walk through the station. If you don't know where you're going, so like what tube line that you need to go on, it can be quite intimidating. It's a big train station. It's a busy train station. The ticket machines, there is an English language option, so it does make things a bit easier. If you go to one of the windows or the counters where someone can help you with tickets, they're not always fluent in English, but they can normally, you know, if you say Disneyland Paris, they'll normally sell you the right tickets. I've never encountered this, but I have heard of people pretending to work at the train station, trying to help. So look out for that. If they're over-friendly, if they don't look like they're wearing a correct uniform, just ignore them. Just carry on walking. But that's you know, that's horror stories. Like, you know, it's very rare it happens, but you have to mention it. But if you know where you're going, or if you, you know, just look for the signs of the line that you've got to go on, then it's not too bad. And you get on a train for two stops, get off the train, change line onto the final train, and that train takes you all the way in to Marlevale. So, you know, it sounds worse than it is. And the only time that I find it's really a problem doing that even is if you're trying to do that during rush hour.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to do that really early in the morning, like, you know, between 8 and 10, or, you know, in the afternoon from about 3 o'clock to about 6 o'clock, it can get quite busy on those trains as well. Otherwise, I don't find it generally is too bad.
Yeah.
And it's not very expensive. I mean, I think, I want to say it's about, I always used to say it was like about 15 euros, but actually I think it's cheaper than that. I want to say it's less than 10 per person. So it's not too bad. And as you said, like when you fly into Charles de Gaulle, you've got a few options, haven't you? But what options have you got?
So Sarah's already said that she's booked the bus transfer from Charles de Gaulle. I've done that. I did that the first time because I didn't know better. As such, it was my first time going on my own without anybody else. And it's a great option. Quite slow. It's quite slow going. It's around an hour to get from Charles de Gaulle to Disneyland Paris. Your other option, which is a heck of a lot quicker, which takes about 10, 15 minutes, is the train from the airport, and it goes directly to Marlevale. Yeah. It doesn't have another stop. That is it. It's the same train that you would pick up at Lille. So it goes Lille, Charles de Gaulle, Marlevale. It's literally that easy. I did it. I walked in. There was ticket machines. Bought my ticket, and away I went. And just got on the next train.
I have noticed with that, or from what people have said, that the price of tickets can vary, on that, depending on the time of day.
I don't know, and you can pre-book them.
Yes, you can.
But then France is very different in that you can't really get away with getting on a different train if they check your ticket. They will fine you.
Yeah.
So if your plane is late, then you have to buy another ticket.
Yeah.
So I would never book a ticket like that. I actually did Last time I went out on the coach just because it worked better for me at the time. Because I couldn't fly at that point. It was last September. And I couldn't fly from East Midlands at that point. So it was easier to get the coach. And I actually got off the coach in Lille because it was quicker to do that than get the bus to the airport. So the airport would have been the next stop on the coach. I got off the coach in Lille, had already booked my train ticket, got on the train and was at Disneyland Paris in like whatever 45 minutes it takes from Lille, rather than I would have gotten another hour and a half on the coach to get to the airport and then got on a train for 15 minutes.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't recommend pre-booking your ticket if you're going to get a train from Charles de Gaulle.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, the thing is, you factor in, like, you know, your landing time and how long you think it might take you to get through customs and get your luggage to the other side. But you can never, ever be sure on that. I mean, the thing is, you know, I've done that before and getting off a plane and doing that somewhere else. I've never done it in Paris. But, you know, thinking to myself, right, you know, we're going to be out of this airport in an hour's time.
Yeah.
And that could actually be 30 minutes or 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Or if you try to go into Orlando and you bodged your ESTA using a passport that you had declared lost before putting the correct ESTA through of your right passport and get called up at Border Force and get taken into a side room to be sternly spoken to, then that could be almost four. So for that reason, I would agree, don't pre-book. The other option, which I know Sinead has done before. Do you remember Sinead?
Yeah.
She used to be on all the podcasts. Now she's
occasionally,
occasionally on them. But I know she's a big fan of private transfer.
Yeah.
And that can work really well. I mean, I would say, obviously, it's pricey, but depending on the number of you, it kind of justifies itself.
Yeah.
You know, I think the last time Sinead did it, it was just her and a fiancé, so therefore it's only spread between two people. So if you're doing it as a family, it's going to be the same cost, but it's more reasonable. And when you do that, you obviously let them know what plane you're on.
Yeah.
So the thing is, they normally are watching to see what's happened with that plane. So, okay, they won't know when you've got through customs, but they will know if your plane's been delayed by 2 hours, for example, so they know roughly when you're going to get in. And, you know, it depends on the company. There's a few different companies that do it, but, you know, they might arrange with you for you to contact them when you're outside and then they pull up and collect you. Or they might just be waiting at the time they think you're going to get out from departures, whatever. But that's not normally that's a pretty good option if you want that kind of security.
Yeah.
From what people have said, about €100.
Yeah.
So again, it's not particularly cheap. But then again, if you know, what's TGV? It can be €15 up to I've seen 60 before.
Yeah, I think I paid about 28.
Yeah. So that can vary. So I mean, the thing is, if you look at it like that, you know, let's just say that let's average it out. Let's say you pay 20 a head and there's four of you. That's €80.
Yeah.
For the train. So if you're, you know, if a transfer, private transfer is 100, then it's only a bit more.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, you don't have to, you know, you're being driven there in luxury.
Yeah, so, exactly. You don't have to worry about dragging your suitcases around all over the place and, yeah, so it is an easier option.
So there's a few different ways of doing it. As to Eurostar or flying, I really think it comes down to where you are.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, if you live in posh Wirral, like Sarah does, you've got to get down to London to get on the Eurostar.
Yeah.
Is that viable? that's an, you know, if you're, even if you just get the train down, that's an added cost on top.
So, and the likelihood is that you'd have to book a hotel the night before.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I would say now, I think because there's no direct trains, possibly not.
Yeah, but then you've got to take into account you're going to lose, if you leave it later than when the direct train was, you're going to lose probably 3/4 of a day.
Yeah, it all depends. I mean, the thing is, I know people that will sometimes get a train in, stay in Paris, or stay like nearby Paris, and then travel to Disneyland Paris the next morning. So if that's what you're doing, then yeah, you could kind of do that any kind of day, time of day. But yes, you know, if you want to kind of like, if you're only there for a limited amount of days, and you know, really your first day is also your travel day, then you want to kind of get there early, which means staying in London in a hotel, which again is not particularly cheap unless you manage to get a really early bird deal.
Yeah,
and around there it's pretty hard.
And which in this case, Sarah has, her flight is quite early. She's landing in Paris at 1:20, which would be 12:20 here. So yep, it's going to be an early one. Looking about 10-ish, yeah.
Well, if you're getting out at 1:20, I'd say that's probably about 11.
Yeah.
11 flight. Because what is it? Just over an hour?
Yeah. Probably slightly, a little bit more.
Mm. So, yeah. But, because she's flying from Liverpool, isn't she? Yeah. But, and funny enough, I was saying this to my wife earlier about when you actually, what time you get the train or what time you get your flight and everything like that. Because if, for example, if you booked a hotel Monday to Friday, just for argument's sake, but your flight is Monday, then whatever time, or your Eurostar is Monday, whatever time you eventually get there, you've already lost all that time.
Yeah.
That day's gone. You know, you can do stuff in the afternoon or whatever, but you've lost that morning.
Definitely.
So, you know, that is something else to consider. When me and Craig went last year, we got the train on Sunday, and you know, that's when we started staying in our hotel, knowing our first park day was going to be the Monday. Like, we had tickets booked on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday for that reason, because we knew we weren't going to get there early enough that day to make use of the parks.
Yeah.
But we didn't have park tickets for that day, so it wasn't wasted.
No.
But if you do, then that, you know, that's something else to consider. I think Eurostar flight, it comes down to the costs, comes down to your location, how much traveling you actually want to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Only 25 more questions. the other thing, she mentioned here that she's got the Princess Tea booked at 6.
Yeah.
On that day that she lands, which is, I think, is completely fine.
Yeah, I don't think you'll have much to worry about. You'll be out of the airport by at least 2:30.
Yeah, and let's give it an hour to get there. You'll probably get to your hotel. I would
say at the latest probably 4.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, look, don't get me wrong, you haven't got loads of time, but you'll have enough time to check in, drop your bags off, freshen up before going into the parks to have your dinner.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm refusing to call it tea, I'm sorry. I know she will call it tea, I know Craig will call it tea, you probably call it tea as well, but I can't.
No, I'm a dinner.
Oh, well, it's because of where you grew up, yeah. That's why, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's a roll, not a cob.
Yes. We're going to get loads of angry emails now. So a second question was, what are your top must-see attractions and shows? Now, I guess this is where the Age of the Kids comes in a bit more.
Yeah, which made me rethink it again. I hadn't read that to start with, and I was going for Tower of Terror, Big Thunder Mountain.
Yeah, five. I mean, it's hard. I mean, with a 3 year old, you're limited.
Yeah.
But you know, if you've got a tall 5 year old, then there are quite a lot of things that you might be able to get away with because it's height restricted, right? So
yeah,
that comes into it. Space Mountain, I don't think they'll be tall enough for. But yeah, so what would you say?
I'm gonna do top three, I think. So I would include Peter Pan. I think that's a great ride for kids all ages and adults. I still enjoy going on Peter Pan. That would be my top choice, I think, just because of the ages. Then second, I would give Pirates of the Caribbean a go. My little one loved it. He was only 18 months old the first time I took him on there. I've seen parents take babies on Pirates of the Caribbean.
There is no height restriction on pirates.
Nope. There is not.
You can.
So that would be my second choice. And my third one, and Craig will love this, Mickey and the Magician would be number three.
Yep. Yep. Can't disagree with you on those. Pirates is definitely one that I would have recommended. And all three of them. So I'm going to try and go for different ones to you.
Are you going to pick Snow White?
I am I don't know. Do you like to traumatise your kids? If so, go on Snow White. If you
it's
don't,
all right. I took Sam on Mr. Toad in California.
Okay.
We went to hell. It's 10.
Yeah. Well, you know. We're going to end up there someday. So, I mean, it's a small world.
Yeah,
it's got
great
to be
shout.
Got to be there. Just because of the age of the kids, you know, it's just been refurbed. It's a fun ride for the kids, not so much the adults. Although I think the first time you see it, it's quite charming. It's if you have to do it repeatedly, it starts to lose that charm. In terms of shows, I mean, the only other show that I would, because I've not done Frozen, so I can't recommend that. But would be The Lion King.
Yep.
Because you know the songs are so good, and it's a really nice production. And parades as well.
Yeah.
You got the parades. But if I'm gonna throw another ride in as well, because parades, you know, it's not really something, is it? But Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I don't think your 3 year old's going to be able to enjoy it very much. But I think your 5 year old probably will. And we don't know if these are boys or girls or, you know, whatever. But that's a ride that I think is enjoyable. And I think, you know, they'll get a lot of fun out of. So. Yeah.
Honorable mention goes to the Storybook Canal Boats. I'm not even trying to pronounce it in French.
Yeah. La Paz de... Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess as well, honorable mention to Cars Quattro Rally.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Especially as they are staying at the Santa Fe.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're staying at the Cars themed hotel, whether it's because you like the film or not, I don't know. But yeah. Of the two Cars attractions at Disneyland Paris, there's only one you need to actually go on. And it's definitely that one. But I'm thinking, you know, if you think about it, there is quite a few attractions that you can probably get them both on that they'd quite enjoy. I'm thinking Alice in Wonderland's teacups and the maze, to be fair. I mean, I know it's not a ride as such, but it's something to do. And it's a fun thing to do.
Definitely, yeah.
I wouldn't do Haunted Manor. Well, Phantom Manor.
No, I wouldn't. Not at three. You could. There's no reason why you couldn't. But I took Sam on there, but when he was three or four.
Autopia is another one that doesn't have height restriction. Could be quite fun, depending on the weather. But if it's a nice warm day, it's quite fun to do. Trying to think what else in studios. It's not much. Ratatouille. And, I mean, most of Toy Story, well, not most of Toy Story, but certainly Slinky Dog.
Yeah, and I can't believe we've not mentioned Dumbo and Aladdin's carpets.
Well, I can see why you haven't mentioned Aladdin's carpets.
But it's the same ride.
Yes, yes. If you like one, you'll like the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. Rides to avoid, I think we just mentioned a few of them. But Phantom Manor. Wouldn't really put kids that young on it. Tower of Terror. Your five-year-old might be tall enough. I don't know. But
wouldn't recommend it.
Nah, I can't say I would really recommend it either. And
Flight Force.
Yeah. Again, it will come down to height, but again, a bit of an intense one. Star Tours. Not sure what a height restriction is on Star Tours.
Not either.
There's got to be one, hasn't there?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's one. But yeah. But, there is, sufficient shows and rides that the kids can go on. So, and of course, as we previously mentioned, ignore Snow White and Pinocchio. Just walk past. They're not fun.
Yeah.
They're not fun for anyone. What's the next question, P-Dubs?
The next one was, and this was, I thought, quite a good one. How many days should they go for?
Too late, they're booked.
Yeah, they have. for me, on a first trip, I think probably 4 or 5 days. For people like us that have been going for decades, we probably don't need more than 2 or 3 days to get done what we want to do. But I think, and certainly with a young family as well, I think having a few more days gives them that chance to have a break during those days that they don't have to go full pelt. So really, if you wanted a nice relaxed trip, I would say 5 days.
Yeah, I would agree. I certainly wouldn't go for more than that.
No.
But I think 4 days is fine. If you can stretch to 5, then I'd go for 5. Especially, I think it depends as well what time of year you're going.
Yeah, which ties into the next question.
Best time of year to go. It's a very hard question to answer this because I think there's so many variables.
Yeah.
I would say if I was going, if I could choose to go any time of year, I would say late September into October.
Yeah, exactly when I would have said.
The last week of September, the first week of October. And for the obvious reason that it's when Halloween's starting.
Yep.
And it's decorated beautifully. Lots of fun things to see and do. You'll normally get some different character meet and greets at that time as well.
Yeah.
So ones that you wouldn't normally get other times of the year. It's when Jack Skellington normally pops out as well. Although I think he's a bit more regular nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah.
He tends to hang around a lot more than he used to.
He tends to swap out with Phantom Manor Mickey, doesn't he?
Yes. But at Halloween time, you're probably going to get Sally as well. So weirdly, at Christmas, you only get Santa Jack.
Yeah.
Sally doesn't make an appearance at all. But yeah, Halloween, you'll often get both of them. So that is my preferred time to go. That said, going into November, like mid to late November, is also nice because obviously at that time it's become Christmas and you get all the Christmas decorations out. So when me and Craig went last time and, seeing all that stuff is beautiful. I think, if I remember correctly, that was Craig's first time going at Christmas. or in the Christmas season. So. I mean, it's obviously not Christmas in November, but going to that season, seeing like the big tree and the decorations and the fake snow falling and the Christmassy music. So I think that's also a nice time to go. But if you are brave enough with the weather, late January is quite a nice time to go because the parks are generally a lot quieter. So you get more things done. But the weather is colder and normally wetter. So that's what you need to kind of prepare for if you're going at that time of year. But I'll be honest, like, if I was avoiding a time of year, it's when they're going into summer.
Yeah.
Because it can just be such a hodgepodge. And the problem is, of course, people go in the summer because the weather's good and also because of school holidays.
Yeah.
But it is also when everyone else is doing the same thing. So the parks are generally busier. It can get really hot in the parks then as well.
We went in June during the 25th. So a couple of months after the 25th anniversary. And it was horrible.
Yeah.
Weather-wise, it was just too hot with that amount of people. And it wasn't even the school holidays. It was before my little one was going to school.
Mm.
And it was just so hot.
Yeah. And the problem is, you know, I don't know if Sarah's ever been to a Disney park before or anything like that, but, you know, we've been to Orlando. And when you go into Orlando, the weather is, you know, very hot, very sticky. But everything's air conditioned. And there's lots of places for you to go and cool down. Disneyland Paris isn't designed for that. Because that is only a short part of their year. So, you know, there are places, you know, there is air conditioning. There are places you can go and chill out. But there are a lot less of them than you'd get in America, for example. So, that's another reason that I would say it's not a great time to go. But, you know, on the flip side of that, the parks are open later.
Yeah.
So you've got that. I mean, of course, the downside of the parks opening later, it means the nighttime shows start later. So it's something to bear in mind. And I do think, even though you've got a 3- and 5-year-old, I do think trying to go and see the fireworks at least once is something you should try and do. You know, keeping a 3-year-old up past their bedtime is not the easiest thing to do. But if you can, or let them have a little nap before the fireworks start, then, you know, that's fun.
Yep, definitely. And as you say that, I could have done with a nap before we recorded this.
If you had a nap before we recorded this, you wouldn't have woken up for it.
No.
Okay, so the last question is the best places to eat with picky kids. I will tell you right now, I hate this phrase. Because what does it mean? What's picky? Because I think, you know, if I thought about hearing the word picky when I was young, picky was someone that didn't want to eat their vegetables.
Yeah.
Or just eat, like, chicken nuggets and chips all the time, right? But that can be so different now. Like, for example, like, if my daughter didn't have chicken nuggets and chips for a few days, she'd be fine as long as she was able to get fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
Because that's what she prefers to eat. So, you know, I don't know what, in this context, what picky children means.
I think we could give them some easy answers if picky means that they just want burgers, chicken nuggets, chips.
I think that's what we have to go for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you could pretty much go into every Disneyland Paris restaurant. Because that's pretty much... answer. Yeah. Because they all do them.
I mean, Casey's Corner doesn't do burgers, but does hot dogs.
Hot dogs, I mean, yeah.
You can pretty much get chips anywhere you want.
That's they do chicken nuggets in Casey's as well.
They do. That is true. That is true.
Because I've bought from there. But yeah, Casey's... Cafe Hyperion would always be one that I'd point out. for that sort of food. Though can be quite busy. Studio-wise, Studio One, I would always say that's another place to pick up things like that. Probably Starks, if you're being a little bit more adventurous, is another good option.
A little bit more adventurous. I mean, it's basically slices of pizza and macaroni cheese.
Yeah, but it's still a little bit more adventurous than...
Burgers and chips, yes.
Burgers and chips.
Yeah,
I guess. Hot dog-wise, I've recommended it since I went last year. The hot dog van in Avengers Campus is a great option. They're freshly made. They're not your typical hot dogs that come in a packet already done.
If I was going for hot dogs, I would always recommend the Marionette.
Yeah.
Because they're not hot dogs, they're bratwursts.
Yeah.
And they are completely different to what you'll get at Kate. The problem is that people think hot dogs, see Casey's Corner and go, hot dogs.
Yeah.
And they get this Herter, I think they're still a Herter.
Yeah.
You know, this, you know, regular out of the packet hot dog that's warmed up, put in a bun with sauce on.
Yeah.
And you pay top dollar for it. But if you go there, you get a proper German sausage.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the days, I would like to eat a big German sausage. And that would be, and also as well, it's almost the same price as Casey's.
Yeah.
So you got much better quality food. I mean, I think even the buns certainly were pretzel bread.
Yeah.
Rather than like normal hot dog buns. But yeah, it's a much better option. You've got Toad Hall if you want fish and chips.
Yeah, if you can find it open, which during the summer you should.
Yeah, and we went in last November. Oh, yeah. It's very unusual that it was open in November, but it was.
Also, the buffets in the hotels.
Yeah, I mean, Plaza Gardens as well. I think they've got they got Princess... See, the thing is, like, If we're looking at chicken nuggets and chips as being what you want for picky kids, you've got Princess Dinner.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst places, I would say.
Yeah.
Go there for the experience. But the food can be...
It's not about the food.
No.
It's about a kid's experience.
Yeah. So don't expect to... You know, you might have to go and get some food later on, even after you paid those prices, because the food menu there is you know, they obviously do kid food, but the menus are not traditional kids food, I would say.
Yeah. But what I will say is they've got, as I said, they've got the Princess Tea, then they've got lunch with the princesses as well, but they've also got Plaza Gardens booked for breakfast and dinner.
Yeah. I mean, have I done Plaza Gardens for breakfast?
I have.
Okay.
It's a bit of a free-for-all.
Yep.
But you will get a lot of choice. You're not gonna struggle.
Yeah, so is it like you'll get hot, you know,
yeah,
like English breakfast items as well as pastries and...
Yeah,
continental.
And what I will say is that the Plaza Gardens will be a better option for dinner than, say, if you'd gone to the one at the Disneyland Hotel.
Yes.
Because, again, that doesn't cater for picky eaters.
No. I mean, thankfully, it's closed when they're there. Yeah. So it wouldn't even be an option, but yes.
But for anybody that's listening, it will be open in, what, the next 18 months? So just putting it out there that if you want something that's for picky eaters, then Disneyland Hotel's not for you.
No, you get things like salmon and asparagus and food like that, rather than just chicken nuggets and chips, even as a buffet. I think they might have had chicken nuggets, actually, as one of the options.
Yeah, they might have, but it's not worth paying...
No.
That type of money for that, if that's all you're going to eat.
No, exactly. I mean, outside of those, I would say that actually just on the dinner at Plaza Gardens, I've done the dinner a few times. It can be so hit and miss at Plaza Gardens.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone and had dinners there and it's been great, and I've gone and had dinners there and it's been a bit naff. But you do get pretty much everything.
Yeah.
You know, there was burgers, there was nuggets, there was pasta, there was rice dishes. You know, there was a decent selection of food, and some quite nice little desserts as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fine. It is what you'd expect to have at a buffet that caters for everybody.
And what I would say, if you aren't looking for that character experience, I can only recommend the hotel buffets for pretty much the same thing.
I didn't go to La Cantina.
No, I haven't been.
At Santa Fe, but I, when I first went, so 31 years ago, we stayed at Cheyenne. We ate at the Chuck Wagon Cafe.
Yeah.
I think 3 out of the 4 nights that we were there. And the food was always good.
Same as Sequoia Lodge.
Yeah. I mean, I think the buffets are quite similar in the hotels anyway, but you had a good selection of everything. You know, you had smoked meats and things like ribs, as well as nuggets and chips and burgers and all that. So, I think the only one that's slightly different, I think, what's the one at Newport Bay?
Oh. It's not Cape Cod. I thought it was Cape Cod.
It
must be, yeah.
Yeah. That one tends to lean a little bit more on the fish side than
I'm not sure about the New York now either.
No, I've not done the New York buffet. I mean, people seem to like it, but you get things like mini burgers. I remember Craig talking about getting mini burgers, and that's to have them cooked fresh because they wanted no sauce in them for his nephew because of autism. So, and that's another thing. I mean, you know, if you've got food allergies or if you've got things like that where kids don't like sauces, then normally if you speak to somebody, they can you know, help with that. It will depend on obviously what it is and what food it is, but you can normally get some help with that as well. Again, it depends on how, you know, what we're talking as fussy. Some kids love that stuff and other kids just, you know, my daughter, for example, like, she's very funny with sauces. So she likes things to be a lot more plain. What about outside the parks?
Outside the parks, I think you've got some great options. You obviously will always highly recommend Vapiano's.
I thought he was going to leave for McDonald's, but
McDonald's is McDonald's.
I would say it's not. It's more expensive.
No, because you're going to queue for an hour.
It's more expensive. You're going to queue for an hour. The vegetarian options are fish sandwich.
There's no seats,
despite there being 2 levels. And an outdoor area. But I mean, it's fine. I mean, if that's what you want, it's there. Just make sure you go at a time when it's not particularly busy.
Earl of Sandwich is another great option.
Yeah.
Plenty of choice in there.
Yeah. I mean, I struggled in there, but that's because of just being vegetarian. You know, they had one vegetarian sandwich, and it wasn't particularly appealing. If you go, I still think they do their night menu.
Yeah.
Which there are a few more options. Like, they do quite a nice mac and cheese.
Yeah. Good ribs.
I'll take your word for that. And of course the brownies. I always leave with way more brownies than I actually need because the brownies are so good. But no, you mentioned Vapiano's. I mean, Vapiano's is my number one there. It's great. You got, you know, options for pizza, for pastas, risottos. You know, you choose what you want from what they have, and they cook it fresh for you and bring it out. It's a really good option. Lagrange at Billy Bob's saloon is really good. It's a live music bar, but upstairs is a restaurant, and it's one of the better buffets you'll find on property, I think. It's got a really good, huge buffet. But it, you know, because it's a live music bar, you will often be in there when you're playing live music or loud music. So if you're not keen on that, not great, but it's reasonably priced, and I think a lot of people don't give it enough respect. Put some respect to its name.
And I suppose the last one is the Nets.
Yeah. The thing is, if you want burgers, you've got three options. Yep. And two are pretty good, and the other one's McDonald's. Because you've got Five Guys as well around the corner next to Vapiano's. But Annette's is a fun time. Again, can get really busy. So pick your times. But yeah, I think there's some great burger options. There's a nice variety of burgers as well that cater for all different tastes. And it's fun. It's like a fun venue. You know, Five Guys isn't fun. It's Five Guys. It's the same that you'd experience over here. But you'll get a decent burger. So, you know, it is what it is. Also, the sports bar. If you want a pizza, they're quite reasonable. You can get little pizzas in there.
New York style sandwiches is pretty decent as well, I think. I haven't eaten in there for a long while, but...
No, I've not, actually. But, yes.
Always seems to be a queue in there, which is why I don't go in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite small, which doesn't help with the queuing. But, again, at the same time, if you think about it, if there's a queue, it's probably for a good reason. I mean, there's some good restaurants if you want to go to Valley Europe. But I mean, I don't think you really want to drag your kids to Valley Europe. But, you know, I think there's plenty of options in the parks and also in the village.
Yeah.
So, definitely. You know, I think there's some good options they've already gone for. So the only one I would have probably not done myself would be the Princess Tea.
But there's clearly a reason why they've got that box. And I don't think it's necessarily the food.
No. No, and in fact, my brother's book is going in November. They just booked the other day. And it was quite funny because he said to me, "What's this?" And it was talking about Premier Access. And he's like, "Do I need this?" And I should have turned around and said to him, "Well, you're rich enough. Yes, just buy it." But I was honest with him and said, like, I don't really think you're going to need it very much. And also, because of the age of his kids and what they're likely to go on, I was like, I don't think you would use it enough to justify the cost. I said, you know, if you want to fast pass some attractions, just do it individually.
Yeah.
Rather than buy the Premier Access. It just seems, unless you're going to go on everything, it seems like a bit of a waste of money for me. And the thing is, if you are going to go on everything, then fine. But if you're not going to do Space Mountain or Tower of Terror, I'm trying to think of some of the other attractions that are on that. You know, it's not worthwhile doing because you're not getting the value for money out of it. So he's going soon. And he mentioned about the Princess. I don't know if it came up as an option or something flagged up because he was then asking me about that. And I said, look, if I was doing the Princess, you know, if I had the option to do Princess Breakfast or Princess lunch/dinner, I think because of when they're going, I don't think they're doing dinner. I think it might just be lunch. But I said to him, go for breakfast. Because I think it's more reasonable in price. And I think you're probably more likely to have food that people will eat.
Yeah.
You know, you got some sausages, you got some bread, you got some pastries, orange juice. Whilst if you look at the menu for the lunch and dinner, you know, it can be very hit and miss on what you're going to like. And look, you're still going to meet princesses. Which is
far better than trying to queue up at the Princess Fairy Tale Hall.
Well, that's what His wife said to me, she said, well, does that mean that we wouldn't have to queue up the Princess Pavilion? And I said, yeah. I said, to an extent, you know, I'm not, you know, if you go for Princess Dining, does that mean that you're not going to also be dragged to queue for that as well? I don't know. Because, you know, you might want to see the princesses in there that day. Who can say? But if you just want to say you've met some princesses and you can just pretend the other place doesn't exist, then it's a great way of doing it. But I think the breakfast is better value, you know, because of the difference in price, but also you're probably going to have more food that you'll enjoy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But look, you know, I'm saying it just to be real, not because I'm trying to like say you've done the wrong thing or anything like that. If your kids will eat what, you know, is on the menu, then that's great. And if they don't, but they have a great experience, then does it matter?
Exactly.
Just buy them a hot dog on the way out. Just not from Casey's. that was all the questions, wasn't it? I think we've covered everything. She did say as well that, you know, or Craig, when he sent this message over, said about why they'll miss the 6 o'clock sitting. I don't think they will.
Shouldn't have any worries.
If they're getting it 20 past one, give it 2, even 3 hours. If it took 3 hours to get from the airport, you know, through customs and their luggage and to the hotel, that's still just after 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So,
plenty of time, and then it's what, a 15-20 minute walk?
The young kids,
yeah, I would imagine they'll be 20, in buggies,
possibly, yeah. So, but you know, regardless, you know, I think we'll probably do it in 10 or 15, probably 20, 25.
Yeah,
you're still gonna make it, you're still gonna make it, you know, it's fine. That's it. You know, I think we covered how to get there or not get there, what to go on, where to eat, and how many days. I think we've done all right.
And when?
Yeah.
I think we covered a lot for a beginner.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, if there is something, you know, if this is your kind of first time listening to a show like this, or if you're in a position now where you're thinking of booking your first trip, and look, I'll be honest, we talk about this stuff all the time, right? We talk about how difficult booking for America is.
Yeah.
And I don't mean walking into your travel agents and booking a holiday. That's the easy bit. But actually, you know, kind of getting all this stuff ready, booking your rides, booking your park days, you know, Genie Plus, all this stuff. Like, there is so much that goes into these holidays, which is so difficult and cumbersome and tricky. You know, I think Disneyland Paris makes it quite easy, and yet it's still not easy if you don't know what you're doing.
No, exactly. And I think we've set out how we would do it, and that's from experience. Obviously, you were going to Disneyland Paris from quite a young age. I was a young adult by the time I started going, and I went into it completely blind, not knowing anything. And this is from experience of the last, what, first time I went was 2011, so 12 years.
Wow.
Experience. So I've been through those mistakes, and hopefully my experience of that will help others, and likewise your experience.
I was just thinking the other day, right? Because it's, I mean, this is a terrible time for me, right? In a week, I'm 40. And I was thinking back, because I went to Disneyland, well, Euro Disney, when it first opened for my 9th birthday. Just after my 9th birthday, like a couple of days after my 9th birthday. So 1992. And at that time, there was no Eurostar. Planes were invented. My parents would not fly. So the only way that we could get to Disneyland Paris was on a boat. Got a boat over, got the ferry over. It was horrendous. Then we got on a train, I believe from Calais, but I don't even know. And I just remember it being like quite an old-fashioned train. There wasn't even a TGV. And then we got to central Paris, at which point we had to get on the underground and go the rest of the way. Now, we left our house that morning. It was something... I mean, it wasn't that stupid, but let's call it 7:30. So you don't leave, you know, you don't wake up and leave. So I must have got up about 6:30, something like that. So we got, that's when we left our house. And we got to the Hotel Cheyenne at about 9 o'clock that night.
Yeah.
We hadn't done anything else. We hadn't stopped to sightsee or anything like that. We'd stopped to get something to eat in Paris. But it was pretty much traveling all day because that was it. And now, if you wanted to, you know, you could, especially where I'm from, you know, you could be there in 5 hours if you drove.
Yeah.
If you drove. You know, if you want to get, if you want to get the Eurostar from London, it would take you about 3.5-4 hours from where I live. And I'm in the parks. You know, the difference there. Oh, you want to fly. You know, I mentioned earlier about the airports. My local, now my nearest airport, I believe have just started flying again to Paris.
Yep.
So it would be about 30 minutes up the road for me to get to the airport. And then that fly me into Charles de Gaulle. So that's opened up a completely different option for me, which... was never really thought of before.
Yeah.
To do. So times have changed, man. It's much easier now. Much better now.
As much as we complain that things have gone missing, I still think it's easier than it was when I first started going.
Mm.
Because the first time I went, and this, again, not something I can recommend to people, was on an organised tour, a bus trip, because I just didn't know. And now it's common knowledge that there's God knows how many other ways of getting there that are better.
Yeah. But you live and learn. And that's the thing, you know, unless you have some kind of ideas. I'm not, what I will say, if you listening, obviously, if you know anyone that's been, go and speak to them. Whether it have been one time or 20 times, it doesn't matter. But they will be able to give you information other people won't. If you go into a travel agent, they will get you there. But they will get you there as they want you to get there. Yeah. You know, whatever it is that they've got to sell, whether that's a flight package, whether that's a Eurostar package, that's how they want you to get there. And they'll help you get there, but that might not be the best option for you. So speak to people. You know, find out what the easiest options are from you. Do you live near an airport? Do you hate, you know, I know people that hate the idea of being on a train underwater. So Eurostar and shuttle are both out.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't understand how it works.
No.
They think there's just a bit of brick between us and the water. It isn't. Well, don't worry.
Well, I mean, there are.
There are, but it's not just that. No. Yeah.
No, it's a bit more than that. You're also in a plastic tube. But no, I mean, yeah, I get it. I mean, I think it's wonderful. I think, you know, what they've done with Eurostar is great. But I can understand why people might be apprehensive about it. But, you know, it seems like such an easy, good option for a lot of people. Why would you not?
Yeah.
And there'll be people that don't want to fly. So then there are the other options. So we didn't talk about going by car, but the simple facts are you go on, if you drive down to Ashford, is Ashford? No, he's not. Is he Ashford?
Yes.
Oh God, I just had a complete brain fart. You go on the train there, you drive on, like you would do a ferry, 30 minutes just over 30 minutes. You come out the other side into Calais, literally roll off the train, and you follow your sat-nav. Yep. There's tolls. That's one thing that people don't talk about very often. We've mentioned them here before. We did an episode fairly recently, didn't we, with some of the drives. So there's tolls. You can listen to that. It was a few months ago now. But you know, that's the only other thing you need to kind of really be concerned with. And it's about 3.5 hours. But
what I will say is, if you're looking for your own comforts, then driving would be your way to go. I would probably say overall it's the most difficult of the three in the long run, just because you are having to do everything. Whereas if you go the other way, other people are taking care of getting you there. Don't have to worry about that. And it is going to tire you out from driving. There's no doubt about that. It's going to tire you out traveling, full stop. But
I think there's two things to consider with cars.
Yeah.
How much you love driving and how comfortable your car is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think that really plays into it, because if you've got quite a small car that feels a bit cramped at the best of times, it's not going to be a great journey for you.
No.
If you've got an electric car, that's something else you've got to factor in. There are, of course, many ways you can find out where you need to stop for charging points. There are even apps that tell you exactly where you'll need to stop and how long for to charge your car if you need to.
Yeah.
But if you don't have an electric car, that's not as much of a problem. But I think that comes into it just as much. Because if you don't like, you know, if the idea of driving from, you know, down south to like Birmingham or somewhere sounds like hell. And I would say the roads you go on, because they're toll roads in France, they are exceptional roads.
Yeah.
Like there's not a bump on them. They are smooth as ice. And I don't mean you'll be skidding. I just mean they are smooth roads. You're not going to be bumping around. And they're quite quiet compared to the motorways that you're going to be used to. So it does make it easy, but yeah, it's something to factor in. But it's another option. We didn't really talk about it because it was when it was asked, but it will be an option for some people. And I think I almost talked Craig into doing it. Because the other thing as well, if you've got a car, you'd have to worry about luggage capacity.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't buy that thing. It's too big to lug about on the Eurostar.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have that problem in a car, but yeah. Right. Well, we said we were going to end this a while ago, but we'll end it now. I think we've covered literally everything. But
yeah,
if definitely. You are listening to this thinking they didn't talk about this, they didn't talk about that, or I've got a question which is about this subject, but they never got round to, then let us know. We'll be happy to try and answer any questions that people might have to do this.
Definitely.
And we will be back later this month to talk about the latest show to open in the studios. And I guess we'll have to talk about that bloody squid as well.
Yeah, I guess so.
And if you don't know what the squid's about, well, you're going to have an interesting next episode. Let's go that way.
Yeah, definitely.
You didn't do your catchphrase.
No, I didn't. Au revoir. Au revoir.
Podcast is a That Production and part of the After Dark Podcast Network.